There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey guys, it's Chris. Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast. All right, quick little business up top. Just want to tell you the Nerdist Podcast Live, June 10th at Largo in Los Angeles with Craig Ferguson is going to be super-tastic amazing. And you can go to Nerdist.com and find out how to get tickets for that. Largo only gave us a handful of tickets to sell online at the price of $20. And we're almost out of those. So if you want the $20 ticket price, go on right now and get them. Otherwise, you'll have to call Largo and pay their normal ticket price of $25.
I know, $5 more,
but it'll be worth it. All right, so let's get down to this episode. This is Matt Walsh. We recorded this a little while ago. I had accumulated so many recordings at once that I just kind of staggered them over the next couple months. Matt Walsh is a founding member of the Upright Citizens Brigade, or UCB, as it's known to people who like to shorten things. He's a founding member, along with Matt Besser and Ian Roberts and Amy Poehler. And not only is Matt Walsh one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, but he is also one of the most amazing improvisers you will ever see. So if you get a chance to see him perform live, I suggest you do it. All right, enough business. Please enjoy the Nerdist Podcast number 18 with Matt Walsh.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Lots of cool fixtures and like you know, green and green ripoffs and stuff like that.
Is it better than IKEA?
Would you say?
You know, it's like the thing is, IKEA you get variety. Yeah. Shitty variety. Not the variety's not shitty. It's just what the variety is consisting of. It's
welcome to guys talking about furniture.
I love furniture,
but not how to build it.
No, oh god, no.
I don't know.
Never.
Well, they say we aren't nerdy enough, so now let's talk about furniture.
Does he need to lean closer to the microphone?
Yes. I don't know how talking he into the microphone.
Is he coming in fantastic?
Yeah. How about
you have an amazing projection.
I do have a
the
good
stage, because you come from the stage.
I have a natural.
You come from
timber.
The stage where microphones are right in your face, right? Isn't that how they do it in the theater?
Exactly.
Theater.
I heard this. I think I already told this story on the podcast, so I'm not going to tell it again. It was the James Gandolfini, Jeff
Foxworthy.
Yes, James Gandolfini and Jeff Foxworthy.
Oh, Jeff Davis,
starring in
Blue Collar Mobsters.
Blue Collar Mobsters.
That's a great movie.
That's right.
A great movie.
So you want me to whack this prick?
You might be a mobster.
If you shoot a stoolie in the eye with a spear gun,
you might be a mobster.
No, I already told the story. Anyway, it's not important. But Matt Walsh is our guest on the podcast today.
He's clapping for himself.
Coming to you.
I thought there were going to be more intros.
They didn't know that.
I wasn't really just hitting.
You're just going to roll into it.
Yeah. Keep going.
We are coming to you from my house, which is nice. It's a nice day outside.
It's a nice beautiful. Day.
You guys, yeah. Do you live on this side?
I live
of town?
On that side of the hill. I live like Valley Village.
Nice. Oh, Valley Village.
Very quiet.
It's going to be great
Village
today.
Valley Village is nice. It is. Super neighborhoody.
It is. Yeah, we know our neighbor. It's like one of the few places I've been in LA where there's like five families and we kind of know each other. It's great.
I bet Halloween is pretty spiffy.
Halloween, we go to the nicer neighborhood, which is south of Magnolia.
Oh, gotcha.
It's not very friendly for Halloween for some reason, but the good candy's just south of us.
Well, what's your address? Our listeners will come
No.
Back. What? I don't understand why you
Laurel Canyon and Chandler is close enough.
Okay.
Yeah. Chandler? Just hang around there. You might see it.
Could I be more of a street?
It is a crazy street with its weird in-betweeny thing.
It used to be the railroad, actually. Yeah. Chandler used to be a railroad that ran all the way out, maybe to the ocean, and then they turned it into a bus line. So they tore out the rails, and they put one of the most successful bus lines in the country.
That's true. It's the Orange Line.
The Orange Line.
Yes.
It goes right to the North Hollywood stop, and then everybody can go downtown.
And so, everyone's going to be like, North Hollywood, keep driving.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they keep going.
But it gets used. It's like very encouraging for L.A. as far as
it's amazing.
Yeah, for transportation.
At one time, L.A. did have an amazing transportation system, and then it just went away.
Yeah. Didn't the rubber industry kind of make some payoffs, or like the tire companies and the GM? They basically bribed officials to tear out the trolley cars.
Yeah. And the death of Huntington, the guy who put in most of the rails throughout the city, like he was the guy that made rails go to Long Beach and then out to... Yeah.
I thought it was Judge Doom who wanted to plow through Toontown.
Yes.
Did it sound just like this? Wasn't that how the freeways got built?
Yes.
And Roger Rabbit
That's how the 101
in?
Got what? Built.
Yeah, Roger Rabbit. That's the solved it.
That's how it was.
That's how the 101 got built, but the 405 is a completely different fucked up story. If you see Cool World, you'll see what happens when the 405
Basically,
gets built.
All of LA's freeway systems were Tune related.
Yes, well, hybrid Tune live action related.
You know what blows
Song
me?
Of the South? That's the 110.
Oh, is I can't that think why of another hybrid?
Is that why they call that the Tar Baby Freeway? Song of the South?
Zippity doo dah.
I didn't make that up, Jonah. No, that's what it's called in the movie.
I know.
It's not me being racist. It's Disney.
You ever see that? There's a documentary that the BBC did on Walt Disney talking about how horrible of a person he was.
Really?
How much he hates Jews?
How much he just hates everybody. Like, and how during the animator strike. He would roll up in his car and then just try and figure out which guy was and take names down.
Put them on his list.
Inspect their head for horns. Yeah. No, Mickey, the Jews don't. It's not how it works at all. I don't. What's amazing is that Walt Disney, the famous Dizzy signature, is not actually his signature. He hired an artist to design him an aesthetically pleasing signature.
He could barely even draw Mickey Mouse.
Really?
His drawings of Mickey Mouse, people would always ask, could you draw me Mickey Mouse? And it's just the...
And he'd go, fuck you, Jew.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoa.
Did he do the first Steamboat Willie? Was he responsible for that, or did he hire that one out?
No, he was just a crazy awesome businessman. He made it happen. He produced it. But, the adorableness came from...
Chester J. Lampwick.
Sweating in Los Feliz.
Doesn't he have, 50 Oscars, too?
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, those little bungalows down on behind, Park Boulevard.
Yeah, that's where the old Disney Studios were.
Yep.
Where at?
It's right off of Hyperion, right behind the Gelson's there. There's the original Disney Studios, which are now just bungalow apartments.
Really?
They're really amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool. You drive by, and there's a plaque, I think, that says what they were.
It says no Jews allowed, which was set forth as part of his leaving it to the...
Mixing blood is wrong. Yeah. Here on Disney Ranch.
Disney Ranch.
Well, when he was doing Little Hitler cartoons,
those were cute.
Adorable.
Yeah,
adorable Hitler driving the little boat and then walking through the city with the dancing buildings, but goose stepping, to be fair. But very well done. Horrible to humanity, gorgeously done.
The message was there.
I love when you watch Roger Rabbit again. First of all, movie totally holds up still, in my opinion. But what is amazing to me is now that knowing what I know about the business, now that I've been working in it for so long, having all of those different brands come together in one movie will never happen again.
Yeah.
Never. I mean, you see Warner Brothers and Disney and King Feet, all these.
When I watched that movie, that's exactly the thought I had whenever it came out. I was like, how did they do this? How did they negotiate this friendly alliance between Warner Brothers and Hanna-Barbera, whoever else appeared in there.
Blue Mice is doesn't Bugs talk to Mickey near the end?
Yeah, they're all together. Yeah. It's all of them come out together at the end when they...
Yeah, he was like, oh, he was a toon, huh?
Yep. Yeah. And then they thwart the plan, but then it doesn't explain how the plan ends up happening anyway.
That was back when Robert Zemeckis did stuff that wasn't motion capture.
Yep.
He directed that, yeah.
He did a Polar Express, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I couldn't really watch Polar Express because
everything looked kind of like
everyone looked dead. Everyone looked like those old Victorian Memento Mori dead pictures where everyone's had dead eyes because they were dead. Tom Hanks.
Hey, kids, let's all get on the Polar Express.
Hot chocolate.
Forever.
Like, it was just so creepy.
Robert Zemeckis' episodes of Tales from the Crypt were some of my favorites.
They are good, yeah.
He has really good ones. Like the Crazy Santa, the Crazy Santa guy.
I didn't see it.
That's good stuff.
Yeah. Tales from the Crypt. Good show.
Yeah.
By the way, maybe we didn't mean to not talk about Matt Walsh and what you're up to.
No, it's okay.
Matt Walsh, founding member of the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is arguably the hottest comedy,
scene
on both coasts. Yeah. Now, you guys came out of Chicago.
Originally, yeah.
Originally, but there's no UCB in Chicago.
There is not.
So was it just sort of like...
We were just a sketch group in Chicago for 5 or 6 years, and then we moved to New York in 96, mm-hmm. and then 2 years later, we opened our own theater.
Now, what was the sort of driving force behind, like, what made you guys say, like, because that's a big leap from we're a group, now we're actually going to open a theater, and then furthermore, to steamroll what you're going to say, it's amazing that, because usually when people open schools, they don't really work much after that, but all of you guys individually work a shitload, so you've actually managed to legitimize everything that you guys are doing.
The reason we opened Part A, mm-hmm. The reason we opened the theater is because when we got to New York, people had never seen long form improvisation, which is what we were kind of schooled in through this guy Del Close.
Of course,
Chicago.
Yeah.
And so they were interested. So we started teaching classes, and then we took all our little money and we kind of pooled it in our little sketch group kitty, so we could go to LA to do showcases or buy props or make small movies. And then by the time we'd been there a year, we had so many students, and those students were starting to do shows at the same theater space. And in New York, nobody respects you. They're like, move your props, get out of here. Like, they don't treat you well. Go back to Chicago, we'd heard many times. So we decided, let's get our own clubhouse, basically. So mm-hmm. we found this old strip club that Giuliani had shut down in his campaign to moralize Manhattan. And so we benefited from that. So we knocked down the pole and all the mirrors.
Oh, was that part of his replace tits with bits campaign?
Yeah.
So that's like to go through and put comedy in all the old adult clubs?
I think his goal was to get Mickey Mouse on 42nd and Broadway, which he did, which he succeeded in. And then, so that's why we started the theater. And then we have people in place now that are much more talented than we are at business. So there's a guy named Alex in New York, and Susan, who you all know, runs the LA part.
So what does a sketch group do in the mid-90s when there's not really much of an internet? Like, how do you – I mean, is it – you know, are you in a situation where you're just handing out VHS tapes of stuff and trying to pass them around?
Showcases. You have to go to L.A. or New York to get discovered, obviously. So we decided to go to New York because we felt like people in New York go out to theater more. And, like, in L.A. at the time, it was just like a showcase – and then you could never mount a run in L.A. There was never, like, long-running comedy shows in L.A. Mm-hmm. So we felt like we could do that in New York. So we did that in New York, and we had a manager, and he got people there. And then we met a guy named Kent Alterman at Comedy Central who kind of championed us in there, and we got a sketch show. We went to Aspen and then got a sketch show.
Oh. Yeah, the sketch show. I mean, I loved the sketch show.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a phenomenal.
Pretty weird, but funny.
Yeah, but, yeah. You know,
were
I mean.
Were you a stoner back then when you were watching it?
I was a drunk.
Drunk, okay.
I was a kid that was straight edge, and I still enjoyed it.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I find a lot of our fans are big stoners.
I mean, I have to, you know, I have got to credit Comedy Central. I know a lot of their, you know, there's a lot of Mencia stuff on, I mean, not anymore, but, you know, there is a lot of mainstreamy stuff on Comedy Central, but they really do try to put more alternative stuff out there, and it's just, for whatever reason, their main demographic doesn't always come together to support that stuff. And so, you know, you have more blue-collar Mencia stuff that kind of pays the bills.
Yeah, but that stuff has to be there to necessitate, like, all the other little
things. I agree.
Yeah.
I know. I totally agree. So
now, you've done a half hour, right? You and Mike did.
Yeah, we did a half hour together.
Have
yeah.
you ever done a Comedy Central
no,
half hour?
I've done, like, their little showcase show, the Gotham show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just curious.
It was cool. You know, like, the early days of half hours, you know, if you talk to someone like Dimitri Martin, he was like, the half hour changed my life. But he did it when there weren't that many yet. And by the time Mike and I did ours, as Hard and Firm, there were already like eight seasons or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's 100 and something half hour specials. You know, there's only so
it
much.
It was sort of like a Law and Order. Everybody gets to do
one. Yeah, exactly. So there's only so much TV real estate. So
yeah,
it just, you know, when guys like Dimitri did theirs, they could run. They would just run the shit out of those same handful over and over and over again.
Yeah,
Demetrius was different from the rest, though. Like, he made his stick out, like, very cleverly. Yeah. Where it's like each act had something different. Like, it progressed throughout each, you know, commercial break.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, he did his stand up and then he came back and then it was the easel and then he came back and it was the guitar. And like he, like, and like that's, I remember seeing that, and it looked different from every other one.
But they really do a nice they do a really nice job at Comedy Central when you're shooting a comedy special for them, because I did Premium Blend, and then I did The Half Hour, and then I just did a couple of episodes of The John Oliver Show, and they create these really great environments where, you know, if you're used to doing comedy in LA, you kind of get the sense of I hope the crowd's not industry and surly. But, you know, they pump these crowds up, and they're in these gorgeous theaters.
Beautiful theaters.
And they do a really nice job, and they make it so that you can succeed.
Do you get a final cut on that, or no way?
No.
Like, you have no say about, I don't want this bit in there, or any of that?
I mean, I guess ultimately we could have, I don't know if they would have listened. I mean,
shoot more, like for a half hour you shoot 40 minutes of stuff?
Well, the half hour is actually 22 minutes or 21, you know, when you're talking about commercials. So you do a half hour material that they cut down to like 21 minutes. And the guy that, you know, because they pair you up with people to, you know, so they'll keep one audience for an hour for two different comics to do each a half hour. And the guy that went on before us only did like 20 minutes, and they made him go back out and do like another 10 more minutes. Yeah. So it was like he literally walked off the side. There was just a finger pointing like, go back.
The reverse Sandman had to come and sweep him on back sweep to the stage.
Reverse Sandman.
What's funny too is I think one of our first UCB gigs at Comedy Central was a comedy special called Comic Cabana.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a Cuban theme and a Cuban band. And it was basically stand-up, but we were the only sketch group. And I remember Andy Kindler went on and totally bummed because, you know, he makes fun of himself. And I think that audience didn't like it or whatever.
Well, like a normal person will feel sorry for someone.
Yes,
they can
exactly.
Fun of themselves,
you know? They started to sense, oh, he's failing because he keeps commenting on he's failing.
Well, they also, a most regular crowd, like they're like regular people don't understand comedy deconstruction.
Yes.
And Andy is one of my all-time favorite
comics. He's all about digressions.
To watch. And he's so innovative with, you know, with what he does. But it's sort of like, you know, if you're like a regular comedy, if you're just like a regular person and you don't see a lot of comedy shows and you don't really understand the mechanics of comedy, it's like sending a freshman in college to an upper division physics class where they're like, what's happening?
Yeah, but he literally bombed, and all the comedians were kind of laughing with him, I think, because he was enjoying it as Andy would. But when it aired, it was amazing. Like, they sweetened it and it looked completely funny. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It was amazing how they turned it and they figured out, okay, we can use this joke and we can just cut and beef and sweeten it. So it was interesting.
And Jimmy Pardo's special, they edited it so weird. I remember watching it and they cut to commercial in the middle of a bit, and like where he's talking about hats, how he loves hats. And then like it goes to commercial, it comes back, and he's still continuing the bit about hats. And it just like you get the like, how long has he been talking?
But I think what happened with Jimmy's was he did. I think he went into the crowd a little bit, which is he's amazing at.
Yeah.
And I think those are all the parts that they cut out.
Oh, so it just seems to.
And so they, yeah, they, I mean.
So if he was talking about a bit and then he starts going into the crowd.
I think that's where they snipped. Yeah. So, but I mean, you could listen to Never Not Funny and maybe Jimmy would explain, or we should have Jimmy on and then we'll talk about it. Like, what happened?
Talk about podcast synergy.
Just fucking lay him down. Yeah. And we'll just pin him down and get in his face. We'll just dribble.
Suck it back in.
Yeah.
Touch your eyeball.
Back in. Yeah. Yeah. Or like a chalk nose where you just squat over someone's nose with your butt and you just poop a little bit, but then suck it back in. You just suck it back in. A chalk
Why
nose.
Why is it called chalk nose? Like, what kind of black, brown chalk were you working with?
It's something an Australian girl told me about. So if you hear
it's a way to torment someone, you put your
in Australia,
on their
I guess.
Nose?
Yes, and then you just let the little turtle poke out a little bit and then suck it back in. But
it sounds like a rugby ritual.
It does, and it sounds a lot cuter when you're like, oh, I'm going to give you a chalk nose. Like, then it's cute. But in America, it just sounds rapey.
I think universally.
Really?
It sounds rapey.
Yeah. I think Australians make everything sound cuter. Oh, rapity-doo. Rapity-doo. Who doesn't want that?
What was that old John Benjamin, or no, John Glazer character, Wackadoo?
Yes.
And Wackadoo is a great old John Glazer character. Wackadoo, I fucking hate Jews.
Sponsored by Disney. Matt Walsh, what are you working on now? Is there anything that you're working on that you're
excited
about?
I was going to promote Players, but it's not going to be back on until July.
I know,
July.
I'm sorry. Oh,
it's
good.
Not your fault. It'll be on in July, yeah.
Good.
They gave us a new lead-in because the previous lead-in was like 15-year-old boys who get boners watching little girls.
What?
It's a very sexy show, and our show isn't very sexy, so they want to pair us with something that's more like 25 and
so you're talking about actually having some type of programming synergy.
But they don't have any other programs. Like, we're the first, we're the second narrative comedy they're developing. Everything else is sort of like reality or like special show. Rose versus Joe's is going to be our lead-in.
I had lunch with Sean Conroy like last weekend, and he was like, "I don't know if our show's coming back." And I'm like, oh,
it is.
Fuck. Okay, good.
July 14th.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Because you guys are so fucking funny. I mean,
great cast too. It's
a wonderful
cast. Solid cast.
Here was my experience with Spike, and I'm not saying that. And this was like 5 years ago. I don't know if any of the same people are there, but I went in to pitch him a show, and I go through the whole pitch, and they're like, "We're only shooting shows outside." And I'm like, what?
Really?
What are you talking about? Yeah, we're only shooting shows out of doors right now. Those are the only shows we're buying.
From the hours of 1 p.m. till
golden hours. Why would you lay down that kind of, that to me just sounds like a marketing person that doesn't understand how to read data. So they're like, well,
and we'd like you to wear blue shirts.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all we're doing.
You know, in the movie Back to the Future, Marty wears a vest. So from now on, everyone wears vests. Like that's how.
Or they looked at all the shows that were succeeding, and what's the common? They're outdoors. Yeah.
Right.
That's
right.
Why they're working.
There is a logic behind it. It's just not a good logic because what the real logic should be is, hey, let funny people make funny things.
Yes.
Yeah. The end. If it's inside, outside, in space, in a fucking...
I'd watch that. In space?
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Funny people in space?
Funny people in space.
Like Mel Brooks made that movie.
Baseball. And a cartoon.
Wasn't that the first title? Funny people in space?
Funny people in space.
Spaceballs, yeah.
That movie was like 20 years too late, right? Like, it came out in 19...
It came out 20 years later after Star Wars.
I enjoyed the shit out of that.
It was 10 years.
Our age.
Yeah. No.
Spaceballs.
Star Wars came out in 76.
Yeah, Spaceballs was late 80s.
Yeah, Spaceballs.
All right. Yeah. Let's say 15 years.
And Empire Strikes... Jedi was what, 84?
Was it that late?
Yeah, I think it was.
Are you sure it wasn't like 76, 78, 81?
But there were still Star Trek movies being...
But it was all Star Wars parody. I don't know. It always felt very like...
It was a few years later than it should have been on the heels of the
trilogy. It felt like it was in the can for 8 years is what it felt like when it came
out. Still
well, in that
it.
Case, then, Dracula Den Loving It came out about 60 years too late. Hot off the heels of Bela Lugosi's Dracula comes Mel Brooks' Dracula. Ted loving it.
But Dracula's a perennial. Like, everybody, even Twilight.
When the blood just shoots over Stephen Weber, I just laugh.
Most blood in movie history in that scene.
I like, I like referring to Dracula as a thing. Like, oh, there's a Dracula in my room. You know, like, I like to refer to it as a thing.
A branded.
It's a branded thing. It's like a creature. A Dracula's a creature.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a
Dracula. What kind of name is that?
I have a friend who I worked with... this guy named Rob Paulson was one of the voices of the Ninja Turtles, but he was also one of the voices of the Animaniacs.
Oh yeah,
he's awesome. Wow. And he worked with Mel Brooks on something when he was like 21 or 22. And he goes, you know, when I go in and I'm all cocky and we're all pitching jokes, and Mel has these characters from the Spaceball movie called Dinks. And there's one where one of them gives another character some water, and you know he wants a line in there. So I raise my hand, and I got this great idea, and I go, "Hey, how about we call that one Gunga Dink?" And he just kind of holds for Mel to like pat him on the back, and Mel goes, "Kid, wit is shit. Funny is money." And just totally like, shot him down in front of everyone. I'm like, man, that is a great way. Because how many times do you write a joke that you go, "This is so clever," and then you do it, and then fucking death. Yeah, like right in the crapper.
Wit is shit.
Wit is shit. Funny is money. Mel Brooks. Circa 80s. So are you still, you're not, do you have time to teach anymore, or do you?
I occasionally teach. I probably haven't taught in 5 months or so.
You do the immersion classes though, right? So you don't.
What do you mean immersion classes? What are immersion classes?
Where you go in those tanks? You go in the tanks with the water where you can't feel your...
Are those like, is that
William,
what it's called?
Like William Hurtin?
Like those like...
Yeah, it's in Altered States.
Thank you. Couldn't think of the title.
The quick like classes where it's like a...
Yeah, like a workshop. Yeah. I did one, I shouldn't say, I did one and this kid brought pot brownies to the class. Kind of ruined it, for real.
Wait, did you eat them?
I did not, but he offered them to the class and like five or six kids ate them. And he didn't tell people.
Oh,
it's kind of a dick move.
That is a dick move.
The most stoned I've ever gotten was after doing ASCAP monologues that one time, like a few years
back. Did
we
all get high or something?
Probably. It's just like these dudes like came up to me after the show. It's like, dude, you were hilarious. Let's smoke pot. I'm like, I don't really smoke. And they're like, come on. And I you know, I like the adoration they were giving me. So I wanted to seem cool. So I smoked pot and I was walking out to my car. And that's when I just got that dog. Remember that one-eyed dog? Yeah. And
you bring him to the theater. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And she peed all over the backstage. And she still had the stitches in her eye.
Why'd you take her eye out? That seems like a terrible thing.
That's how I got her. She was discounted.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah, a little Parker Pilot with one eye.
You weren't just like, she'd be cuter without that one eye.
She was a lot adorable, I'd imagine.
Did you feel like that one eye was always looking at you?
Yeah, she was with that one eye.
But did you ever put anything evil in there? Like a cat eye or something to freak people out?
We wanted to like try a patch out, but every time we put anything on her head, she just would whip it off. Yeah. A fucking dick.
Yeah. Dogs are jerks that way. They don't understand irony.
But like, yeah, UCB crowds fucking love their weed.
Yeah, you didn't eat. You didn't have an edible. You were just smoking.
No, I smoked. But then I'll walk into my car. Some other guy saw me and smoked me out again. And then it happened again.
Then you turn into Lloyd Bridges in Airplane where you're hanging upside down.
Yeah, exactly. Then I had to drive my car home, which felt like driving a boat on choppy waters.
That's right, kids. Do what Jonah Ray does. Smoke a bunch of pot from people you don't know and get behind the wheel of a vehicle.
I mean, I was if I was lucky, there would have been PCP in there. Then I could have focused on my way home.
At least, yeah.
I don't get wet, though.
I know. I mean, and I'm boring when it comes to that stuff. Whenever like people break out the pot, I'm like, I don't need to have drugs to have a good time, guys. I want to go home.
Yeah, I don't really smoke pot that much. That's why it kind of like it makes it hard to hang out in the comedy scene for the most part, where it's like everyone wants to smoke pot. But I know if I smoke pot, the first thing on my mind after I get stoned will be like, hey guys, I'm gonna go home and take a nap. That's like really all. That's like the craziest side effect where I just like I get the most motivation I've ever had to just go and take a nap.
Well, if people listening have not seen the Ass Cat monologues, they're fucking amazing. And they should go see you guys.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, you know.
You've done it, right?
I've done it a bunch of times. Actually, the last time I did it.
You had some good bowling stories, I remember.
I had some bowling stories with my dad. But the last time I did monologues, there's this older guy in the crowd, and he looks really familiar. And I'm like, God, you look really familiar. And it turns out it was Robert Culp. was there. This was last year. And I guess his daughter was checking out UCB or something, and so he came out with her, and then he just fucking died. Wow. And I just
a year later, do you think it has anything to do with your theater?
Oh my god, no, that's a comic's mind. Like it's something like I did that killed him.
Do you
think it's something I said in that monologue that made him die a year later? That's how self-centered.
That's what amazes me about LA in general. Like, what's his name? Rob York came to our theater, the guy from Radiohead.
Oh, Tom York.
Tom York. Grandpa doesn't know. The guy from Radiohead.
Yeah.
Lead singer. He was at Jeff Garlin's show right before ASCAP, but it always amazes me, like Robert Culp's a huge star. Like, they just sit into this little theater and watch an improv show.
I remember the first Comedy Death Ray I did when the UCB opened, fucking Sporty Spice was there. Sporty Spice was there. She lives up the hill. I remember, you know, we used to do Comedy Death Ray at the M-Bar, which was sort of the... That was kind of the hub of comedy that Aukerman and BJ put together, and then all these other shows cropped up there, M-Bar on Vine.
Yeah, all those other shows really did not do as well.
Well, maybe they didn't do as well. And then when Scott said, they're going to open a UCB theater in L.A., we're going to move the show over there, I honestly was like, well, that's the death of this show. No, people don't know how to sit in theater seats in Los Angeles. It's never going to work. No one goes to theater. This is going to fucking kill this great room. And it's just a nonstop fucking hit. UCB.
They're more attentive in a theater scene.
What is it? Like, what do you think the thing is that you have that makes the UCB theater so sticky? I mean, besides being everyone's crazy, crazy talented and funny, like, what is it about the UCB that just instantly makes people go, I got to be a part of that?
I think part of it is the network of friends we had when we came out here. Like, there's a lot of, not unemployed comedians, but like guys who want to do shows for a good audience. And they might have sitcoms during the day or whatever, but you can, on any given night, there can be a great stand-up just popping in. So I think we had friends when we started, and I also think we don't meddle with people in any way. It's kind of like your slot from 8 to 10. You can do whatever you want, and it's free rehearsal, and the tickets are cheap, so kids, like young, smart audiences, are always coming and finding it. So I think the base of that, the foundation of that, helped build, you know, the theater, and then word of mouth just spread, you know? Yeah. And I think having a show like Comedy Death Ray helped put us on the map, and Ass Cat helped put us on the map, so I think having a few anchor shows when we started really built word of mouth.
Those early shows used to be all comedy nerds.
Yeah.
And then it sort of grew into, I mean, I feel like...
Well, now they're just show nerds. Like, it's just people that are dedicated to
the show. But a lot of them look like children to me. Like, they're little kids.
Yeah.
They're little kids.
That's all I ever, whenever we, the beginning ask out, we just talk to the audience and everybody's like, we always interview them or ask them like, you know, what do you know? Or what's your comp? We always try to find a common reference. And it's hilarious. Like there was five kids from San Pedro who didn't know who Christian Slater was. And they were 20 years old.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, they didn't see Cuffs.
They don't know anything about, they literally had no idea who Christian Slater was. And that's like what you're up against. Like with a young audience, you have to find out what they know.
And you say, he's Talk Hard Harry from Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah. Come on, guys.
He's from Gleaming the Cube.
Heathers? Was he in Heathers?
He was in Heathers. Yeah.
Of course, yes.
He had a cameo in Star Trek VI.
Come on, guys.
What? How about that?
How about that?
He was the guy that in the 80s, everyone was like, why is he doing that Jack Nicholson impersonation? And in the 90s, they're like, oh, no, he's not dropping it.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. But you don't change your references in your jokes, do you? If it's like a young crowd, say you're at the theater, you would not. You would just do whatever you do, right?
For the most part, unless I feel like, I'm trying to think if there's any joke in particular. Let me put it this way. I'm not above it. Like if I feel like there is some sort of cultural reference that would work better on the road, I might mod it for a younger crowd only because I'm not one of those comics who's like, you know, fuck the audience. If they don't get it, fuck them. Like I want it to be a relationship that we create and everyone has fun.
Yes.
And if I'm trying to force them to get things that they don't understand, then it's just then no one has fun. So I'm not.
Then you're just explaining references the whole night.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So
you remember him, don't you?
I'm not above that.
What am
I'm
Sergeant
sure I
Slaughter?
Have done it.
Sergeant Slaughter was a character in the G.I. Joe.
They know Slaughter. I think they know Slaughter.
They know Slaughter now.
Yeah. Well, now.
They might know Slaughter now.
Sorry, I forgot. See, now that's how I'm in a weird area where I'm not paying attention enough. And like it's like I don't know anything about the G.I. Joe movies or the Transformer movies. I'm not like I can't reference things in my own time.
Or Twilight. I've never seen a Twilight, I'm sure.
I've not seen Twilight either.
That's a big common – like that is their – Breakfast Club or whatever for certain. Do you know what I mean? Like movies we love.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, that was a big movie, but I can't.
I would like to see Breakfast Club vampires. That would be amazing. If
you mean Breakfast Club Draculas, right?
Breakfast Club Draculas is what
suck
I'm talking
up,
about.
Johnny.
Yep, that's right.
That'd be a great movie.
You want to win? You want to win? You gotta suck blood.
You know, he's just got the fucking
vampire,
sweatshirt.
You
eat your chicken pot pie. Yeah.
That's actually blood because we're Draculas. I would love to see someone go back and mod all the John Hughes movie with Draculas.
That'd be a good YouTube video, certainly.
Let's call that out right now. Someone make that, please.
Someone make Pretty in Pink Vampires. Or
Pink Vampires.
Peggy Sue Got Married.
That's vampires. But all they do is just add vampires at the end. Yeah. Babies Day Out, vampires.
Draculas.
Draculas Day Out. Are you working on any movies right now? Is
there anything? What have I done? I did a movie called Cherry, which was at South by Southwest. Did you guys go to that?
No, I did not.
I don't know how it did or whatever. And I'm in a movie called Cyrus, which comes out very, very, very small part.
Oh, it's the John C. Reilly.
John C. Reilly, Jonah Hill.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the other Jonah.
The other Jonah.
Yeah, that's a really good movie.
Yeah.
So I'm in that. And then I think I'm in May, I'm going to Arizona to shoot some movie where I play a cowboy who falls in love with a guy who's going through transgender operation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Like a Tender Mercies for Crying Game sort of thing.
Wait, that's fantastic.
This is a drama?
It's a comedy, actually. It's got a kind of a dramatic thing, but it's a comedy.
Hmm.
But it's a very odd, small movie.
That sounds
Yeah, but
really
that's those small movies that, like, boys don't cry, then all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Hey, there's Matt at the Oscars.
Hey, what's up, guys?
All he did was that. He did that one movie.
Remember the movie everyone laughed at him for making? About that lady
transgender
man?
Cowboys, come on. What do you call her? Cowgirls?
Never work.
About that lady man.
The movie about the lady man?
No, the man wife. Man wife. Did you ever do stand up?
I did. I did it for about 2 years in Chicago, in the tri-state area, like Milwaukee, Michigan, Wisconsin, all that stuff. And it was too hard. I would literally have a great show and then an abysmal show, and I couldn't ride it. I couldn't bounce back. It was too tough. It's like the hardest thing in the world.
It's so funny because I feel like people who are hardcore stand-ups look at improv and they're like, yeah, I can never do that. And then people who are hardcore improv people go, stand-up, nah.
No.
It's
tough. And then also I got placed like somebody saw me being funny and said, okay, you're a headliner. Like way before I was ready. So I really experienced like, I can't do this.
I don't
this.
Think I have a... Get out there!
Yeah. And so you're having to fill 45 minutes, so I would bring people with me to kill 5 minutes from the audience or whatever. But I just... it's tough, you know. It was some nights it was good.
I mean, improv is scary to me because, I mean, there was a period of time pre-UCB in the 80s and 90s, it was fucking Groundlings was the Groundlings was the fucking home tree of comedy of you know, sketch and improv comedy in Los Angeles, and I feel like you guys stole a lot of that thunder, which is pretty awesome. But
well done,
thank you.
But man, you know, I did improv a bit,
really,
and I just, my stand-up instincts are too strong. Like, I would always try to steer the scene. And I wasn't a great team member, and those are the things that are bad for improv. You need everyone working together.
Improv though is a great tool, especially the way you guys teach it at UCB, where it's like I took classes, and I never really like intend to be a part of any kind of team or like a group of doing improv regularly, but I loved the information and the knowledge I got from the classes, where it's like it helps you write better jokes. Yeah. It helps you like escalate scenes. It's just like the knowledge I got from doing improv, like, was like way better than like anything I could do with it in, you know, on a stage.
Yeah.
Just like even writing jokes and like stand up, it's just like the improv classes just help you like exponentially.
I was so bad at, because I would always go for jokes instead of driving the scene.
Yeah.
And I had one teacher, it was a guy named Mike McDonald. Do you know Mike? Sure. Mike was on Mad TV.
Yeah.
And he was a nice but sometimes rage filled guy. And he would, and so in a scene, you know, I would go for a joke, and then he would just, joke! Like, he would yell out every time, like, oh, I'm a bad person.
Brandon, you save it for like the last bit in the scene, you know, save the joke for like the last
punch,
part.
Yeah,
punch,
the button,
and then you get out.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, because in the up until maybe 5 years ago or 8 years ago, there was this kind of thing like, oh no, if you want to be on SNL, you go to the Growlings.
Yeah.
And then Growlings is like a, you know, that's the diving board into the SNL pool. And now I feel like it's kind of UCB is the...
A little bit, yeah. Definitely there's a lot of people who come through and have gotten picked out for things like SNL. But I also think Growlings teaches people a very transferable skill, which is that character thing, like how to develop a character and like... which is very still translatable to getting on SNL. Like,
right.
I do think they have a very valuable skill they teach people, which is that, I don't know, developing characters and not catchphrases, that kind of minimizes, but you know what I mean? Like that.
But whole, in a short form sketch, you kind of need, your character needs a hook so that people can instantly...
cross over right away. Oh, I get it. This is the thing. Yeah.
Do you think SNL should still be an hour and a half?
It should be 1 hour and a half sketch. I literally haven't watched a full SNL... The last one I watched was when Zach hosted.
I watched Zach's monologue.
And that was funny.
He was, he did such a great job.
Yeah. He was, I watched the whole show and the show was great. Like, it was really was.
Yeah.
I hadn't really watched since the first time John Hamm was on. Okay. And I thought he did a great job too. But I don't know why I don't sit down to watch SNL anymore.
It's fine. If you just sit down and watch it, it's fine. You know, it's like it's a nice way to spend an hour and a half, better than spending an hour and a half watching something else on TV at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's easy for people to shit on that show and be like, hey, man. I feel like every generation has always said like SNL used to, like the previous generations used to be awesome. But then those previous generations, people were saying that too.
Yeah.
But for fuck's sake. To do a live show in 6 days, or 4 days, or 5 days, or whatever it is, like an hour and a half, that's crazy.
So it's so ambitious. And I'm sure every week you follow the show, it sounds like.
Some.
There's got to be at least one or two good sketches on.
Yeah, right? That's
the thing. Update's got to have at least three or four good jokes, right?
Yeah, no, it's like Update always has like a handful of good jokes, and there is always about two or three like really solid sketches.
Yeah.
And they're usually towards the end.
Yeah, they bury them.
That's true. I've noticed that lately. They've been putting the good stuff at the end.
Which is fine, though, because, like, and the thing is, you don't really need to watch it now because, you know, Hulu puts up the best sketches the day after. So it's fine. You know, like, SNL will probably kind of start gaining steam because of that, because people are only going to be seeing the good sketches. They're going to start tuning in more.
But are people watching the show, or are they just watching the clips that are popping on Hulu?
I know, because you know, you don't get the band performances if you watch on Hulu. You don't get the.
I bet more and more people are watching it on the internet. Of course.
Yeah. Well, that's with everything.
Of course.
You
know? Yeah. Exactly.
What's your internet presence like these days?
Where can you find me?
Well, I mean, just
I
like
do Twitter.
Do you embrace? Did you embrace internet stuff? I mean, did you put a lot of stuff online? Do you have a hub?
My Facebook page is pretty much done by my wife. There's too many options and too
your
many.
Wife is very funny, by the way, Morgan.
Thank you.
So goddamn
she is very funny. Thank you. And Twitter. So I do a little bit of Twitter. I Twitter probably once every 4 days.
Are you at Matt Walsh?
I couldn't get Matt Walsh because it's like they're like dirt. There's so many of them. So Matthew Paul Walsh without the H because I typed it wrong or something.
That's a really long name.
I know.
That almost so takes up the whole 140.
So it's really hard to find.
No, no. So Matthew Paul Walsh.
No H. Walsh. Walsh.
Walsh.
Matthew Paul Walsh. Because I thought I had it. I typed in my full name, and I'm like, great, I got it. And I logged in, and then I realized that's not my full name.
No, Matt, so, I'm not. I like you a lot. I'm no SEO expert.
Get to the point.
But long, not really your name. Could be difficult to
find me. It's true.
Why not go back and put the H in?
You can change it. You know, you could.
But I think also, because I did try to change it. I don't think you can. I think you get like 14 characters for your username.
But and could you go back in and be like UCB Matt?
I could, but then somebody told me, this is good counseling, somebody told me you're better off keeping the same account but changing your name, because I was going to go Matt Walsh 3000.
Mm-hmm.
That seems easy, but something happened and it didn't work.
You can just change your username. You don't have to get a whole new account. You can literally just change your username and keep the same account.
I need you to be with me when we have this conversation.
I'll help you. Okay. I will walk you through this.
Yeah, like seriously, because I just had my AOL. I'm still on AOL.
He is.
Well, that's true. Okay.
It's terrible, and now I can't get in my inbox. I can write, compose mail, but I can't access my mail, only on my BlackBerry. So now I want to go to Gmail because I have a Gmail account, but I don't know how to export my mailing list. Because I tried to do that once 2 years ago. I made a big announcement. I said, I'm tired of AOL. Screw these fuckers. I'm going to Gmail. And then something went wrong, and then 2 weeks later, it's like, dude, are you on Gmail or not? Because I keep writing you. No, I went back to AOL. So it's like, I'm not very tech savvy. It's always a problem.
That's a pain in the ass.
AOL is the worst.
AOL mailing, getting an AOL mailing list is a pain in the ass out of AOL.
Yes, that's what I experienced. And I made the big declaration, fuck these people, I'm going to Gmail.
It's almost like you have to send Tron in with his disk and shoot it at the little space in the middle of the AOL.
It's been done. What? AOL's too strong.
They are?
Yeah.
And then you can't get a person to talk to if you have the free AOL. You call AOL and they say, you have free AOL, so you cannot get person-to-person customer service.
Wow.
If you pay $15 a month, then you can get a person to talk to. And then if you go online, like you Google loading inbox on AOL, which is, I've spent 2 days trying to figure this out. I can't figure it out. And it's like, nobody knows how to do it. Like nobody has this is what you got to do, buddy. I couldn't find it.
Wow.
Because you're going in through... This is going to be really nerdy.
Do it.
Just go into your... You're not using... Are you using Mail, the app on the Mac? Or are you going into AOL?
I'm going into AOL.
Don't do that. Just use Mail because it's a mail gatherer.
I have my computer. We're going to do this after the show.
You can just set up... You can set up a POP account.
Set up an IMAP. IMAP.AOL.com and then...
You can IMAP AOL.
Yeah, we'll fix it. Don't worry.
Really? Okay.
We'll IMAP your AOL. We'll get all your stuff into your Leopard Mail box.
It's going to be.
And then,
it's going to be great.
And then from there, you know,
Leopard 10, right? Is that what I have?
Well, you have Leopard 10, I think it's called.
Yeah.
I remember your machine. I worked on it once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Thank you.
Matt, how fast can you swap out a logic board?
I can do 3 an hour. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you build your own computers or do you buy them?
No, I fix them at the Genius Bar.
Okay.
Yeah, you swapped out everything, all my insides of my computer because they had all melted.
Yes.
Literally melted.
There was something going on in that, but I fixed it.
Well, I think it was just because I never turned it off.
Yeah. Well, that happens.
That could be a problem.
No, but I mean, you don't make like a Frankenstein computer.
No, I'm not. Okay. I don't care for that.
You could, though.
This is much better.
Okay.
Could you make Frankenstein's computer?
Yes.
So he would be able to use it? A Frankenstein?
I have made Robert De Niro's computer.
Would a Frankenstein? He played a Frankenstein monster.
He did. Yeah.
He played a Frankenstein monster. Yeah, fuck it.
He's a Frankenstein.
Because ultimately, he's Victor Frankenstein's... He's Frankenstein's son.
Frankenstein.
Frankenstein. Yes.
So, he's Frankenstein's son, so that makes him a fucking Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's just kill the...
Everybody,
he's Frankenstein's monster!
Yeah.
He's a Frankenstein.
He's a Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But he's not a Frankenweenie.
He's not a Frankenweenie.
Nope.
Hey, you never swapped out my... I wanted you to add RAM to my MacBook.
Yeah,
I could do Even though I'm just going to get a fucking iPad.
Whoa.
I know, I'm going to do it.
I'm sure they're great. Apple makes a lot of great things. I love Apple.
In case they're listening.
Well, I'm just curious, why are your eyes darting around suspiciously?
You're
like
not
you're
a
waiting
fan
for
of the iPad.
Some type of shoe to
what
drop.
What are you talking about?
You're not a fan of the iPad.
No, I look forward to it. It's going to be fun.
I look forward to it.
It'll be fun.
You know what it sounds like right now? It sounds like you're in a relationship where this girl's going, I love you. And you're like, and you're nice too.
Thank you.
That's what it sounds like.
Thank you.
That's what it sounds like right now.
Ditto.
The iPad is like a Kindle, right? Sort of.
In size, yeah. Okay. And you can read stuff on it. Okay.
Jonah's being hugged by a ghost at his pottery wheel.
He's helping me hold the mic.
Hey, now that Patrick Swayze's dead, do you think he's going around and doing that bit to crack up other ghosts?
I think so.
Like, hey, remember when I did this when I was corporeal?
Supposing those ghosts would have had to have seen ghosts.
Yeah, no, he's going. Yeah. Patrick Swayze's going to all sorts of pottery classes and hugging people, and they don't know it, but all the other ghosts are like, "This guy's fucking hilarious."
He only associates with ghosts that died after 1989.
Yes.
Come on, you've seen Ghost, right? Come on.
Oh my God! If someone can ghost,
I remember that was VHS. That VHS tape was white. I remember that.
Oh, really? The box?
My mother had it. The cassette itself was white.
Really?
Yeah, I always thought colored cassette tapes for VHS were
porn.
Just red. Yeah, for porn. There was like red.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's middle-aged woman porn. My mom had it.
That's true.
True. Very true.
It was white tape. Anyway.
At Bridges in Madison County.
That was red.
White box, black tape, right? Yeah. Tape wasn't white.
No, the tape was white.
The tape was white.
Physically, the tape was white.
Really? That's weird.
And I would remember it just because that was the ghost tape, but I'd never go near it.
Ghost tape!
Stop making fun of my speech impediment. Ghost. I'm not scared of them. I just stutter.
Oh. Let's hug. Matt, you have a couple of children now.
I do. Emmett is like 9 months and Jude is almost 3.
That's fantastic.
Judah. That's what we do. Jude, not Judah.
Oh, sorry, I said Judah.
No, Jude.
Have you thought about Judah?
Judah, I didn't think about Judah.
Okay, well, that's fine.
He's not into changing names. We just talked about his Twitter account.
If he's not going to change his Twitter account name, he's not going to change his child's name, okay?
Jason Nash was close to naming his kid Jonah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which he said would have been weird.
Why? Because he knows you?
Because he knows me.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to.
Yeah.
I feel like in the old days, everyone was just like John or Dave.
Tony, yeah.
And then it didn't matter. Like, oh, yeah.
I'm Matthew Paul as well.
Are you really?
Yeah. Matthew Paul.
Catholic
Matthew.
Much.
Yep.
Yeah, whatever. Exactly.
Boston Catholic much.
I'm Matthew Paul and my confirmation name was Luke.
Thomas.
Isn't that hilarious?
I was Thomas. Wow. I was Thomas.
Oh, Matthew that's Paul. Very Catholic,
because I was
too.
Doubting. Anyway,
Matthew,
it's in the Bible.
Luke, Jesus, the Rock, Walsh.
Beautiful name.
Mary Magdalene Walsh. That'll be my daughter if we have her.
So how is fatherhood? Do you feel like that's helped comedy, or has it affected comedy in any way?
It's probably dulled me down a little bit.
You think so?
You're just so tired. Like, honestly, like, you're just so tired with 2 kids. Like, it's just so much work and it's awesome, but like, you show up for a show at 8 o'clock and you've been up since 6,
mm-hmm.
and it's just a different energy. Like, you can't do a midnight. I can't do midnight shows anymore. Like, there's no way you can get up for a midnight show. So that's been more challenging. But I guess I could go Cosby, like, and just start doing things about
wear
family.
Sweaters.
I could wear sweaters, but there is like funny things kids do. So I guess I could change. But I don't really do stand up, so I don't know.
But it's just like, at this point, just a point of reference for a story or like a
But it won't relate to the 21-year-olds at the theater, but now, the older audience will know.
Do you
what
find?
I'm talking about.
I'm just curious. I'm just because I'm fascinated by the process. But do you find? Because UCB, there is a lot of gorgeous, eloquent filth that happens.
Yes, our bread and butter,
and also just filth.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of there's just filth, but I'm a fan of eloquent filth.
Yes.
And there's a lot of that at UCB.
Yes.
And do you find that as a parent now? Do you feel any of that's kind of like, oh, rape joke? I have kids.
No. It has not affected me in that way. Although, because they're still young and they'll never see it.
Right.
So, but if he, you know, if Jude's in high school and he wants to start coming to the show, then it might enter into my, like, consciousness. Like, okay, I have to figure this out. Or how do I explain? And it's funny because Ian and I made some promos for the show. And one of them was this thing.
Ian Roberts
from Upright Citizens Brigade. And one of them, we did a parody of the Two Girls, One Cup. That horrible video. And the premise was like, well, it's the most popular viral video, so why don't we do that? So Ian tried to eat shit out of a cup to promote our show called Players. Long story short, he got an email from his parents who actually saw it. And they basically said, you know, because his daughter was having a hard time in school because they were moving and that's hard on kids. And she was crying a little bit. And the parents were saying, maybe it's not about the move. Maybe it's about the stuff you're putting on the internet and maybe she's seen it.
Oh,
shit. It's like a big guilt trip. So
Which was not really the case, though.
Not at all. And it also, because Ian's parents, unlike like my parents, I've never invited to see anything I've done since since I've been 25. I'm like, you're not going to like it. Like, they right. love that I do it, but I'm like, you're not going to like it. I right. know them. Yeah. And Ian's parents, on the other hand, are completely open-minded and have seen all the terrible things we've done. But that one really crossed the line for them. And I think they felt, they were saying, like, maybe you should think about what you're doing because your daughter might be seeing it on the internet. And he started thinking, like, you know what? Maybe I don't want to bring you into my life anymore.
You know, speaking of eating shit in a cup, Dad. I'm tired of your... It'd be funny if you go home and, like... Like your parents don't know you're home, and you kick open the door, and you're like, "Is anyone home?" And then your dad's there with a cup of shit and a camera, and then you just have that moment where he's like,
"Their dirty little
son, daddy." And then all this time, they could have been
all in the suit.
I tried to dissuade both my parents from coming to see my shows because I'm not. I mean, I wouldn't say that I am. I'm not a filth. I mean, like, filth isn't really my trademark, but I do get filthy in my act.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the same vein.
I use it as a tool.
Yes,
and I try to dissuade. You know, I try to discourage them, but they came and they had fun. They
really,
you know, so they were cool with it. They were both cool with it.
So they do they see you anytime you're in town or if you go through?
No, well, my dad lives in Florida, my mom lives out here, and so. They're not together anymore, guys.
Okay. God,
my parents are divorced. I can't really talk
here
about it.
Here we go.
You seem like you turned out okay. You're a latchkey kid. You're a latchkey comedian.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, they were totally, you know, they were totally fine with it, which was a big relief.
That's awesome.
Although, wait a minute. You know what?
Good. This is the good stuff.
Stirring some stuff up.
I did a show when I was kind of toying around with stand-up in the mid-90s. I did a show in 96. And my girlfriend at the time and my mom and my stepdad came out, and I bombed, like, worse. It was, like, one of the two times I did stand-up that year. And I bombed so bad, and they were there, and afterwards my mom was like, maybe you don't need to be so dirty. And I was already feeling so bad, which is, I'm sure, what happened with maybe Ian already may have felt something a little about it, and they just kind of was kind of like, I don't really need to hear that right now.
I did a show, stand-up show in Chicago, in Naperville. I can't remember the room, but long story short, it was at a Hilton, and they had a club inside the Hilton, and it was like 25 people in the room, and 18 of them were related to me.
Oh, shit.
And at that time, I had a chunk about masturbation. It wasn't my only thing, but I just remember after that show, I didn't even want to talk to my parents, because that was a subject never talked about in the household.
Right,
and I had this. It's very Catholic, very like sex is not a topic.
You do it, but you don't talk about it.
Of course, you do.
You get it done to you,
right?
But you don't talk about it.
You cut the holes out of mouths and magazines, and you fuck them, but you don't talk about it.
Sometimes you put a little water on there, makes it smoother.
Maybe occasionally you'll put some lipstick on a pack of cold bacon, and you'll fuck it, but you don't say a word.
You're Catholic, you can't.
You're driving down the street, you're fucking a hot donut. You're throwing coffee on your balls just so you can feel, but you don't ever talk about it.
Nope.
That's the Catholic
way.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes, as long as you're going to church on Sunday.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very true, though. Yeah. But that was awful. That was like one of my low points. I remember thinking, like, man, that's the worst.
Did you enjoy church when you would go?
When I was really young, it was fun.
I used to go. It was just my mom, and I just vividly remember the church bulletin had the church on the front of it, and I would draw the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man
on the bulletin,
crushing the church on the bulletin, and then I would put them back in the middle of the pile.
Oh, that's awesome.
I used
awesome.
To do that constantly. That's just a little.
Did you draw a word bubble from off the side saying nobody steps in a church in my town?
No, I should have.
My mom used to drag me to church when I went to Catholic school. My mom was the cantor, like she was the singer in the church, and so I was an altar boy.
My mom was a CCD teacher. It was not good.
Oh, yeah. Which I never got touched by any priest, though.
Me neither. Yeah. I felt unattractive.
Me too. What the fuck?
Were you?
Yeah, well, I went to like the one training thing, and that I realized. Well, it's like, you know, they have to let you know how to light candles and shit. And
the training.
This is boring.
Like, American Ninja Altar Boy.
Yeah.
You had to go to the fucking course.
I liked it because it was like a good seat. I was like,
I had something
church,
to do.
Right?
Yeah, I did it for like 2 years.
And you're kind of important.
Yeah.
Wearing your druid robes.
Yeah. I got to handle wine. It was nice.
Got to put out candles and light them with that stick, that thing that had the cup on it.
I think it's like, I went to like a Catholic school, and like I think Catholic schools, they have them so that, you know, kids can be full of like the Lord all the time, like be reminded of it.
Yeah.
And like I think that's the worst thing, because there's nothing a kid hates more growing up than school. Yeah. And then when you like when you fuse religion together with schooling, it just like makes the kid. Like, that's why I think a lot of people that went to Catholic school just, or like any kind of religious school, like have a knee-jerk reaction.
I hate it.
I gotta say, I mean, I'm not a religious person at all now, but I went to Jesuit school, and the Jesuits I found that taught me were super awesome, because they were fucking drunks, and there was a priest named Father Holmes for freshman English, and it always blew every freshman's mind away, because he swore profusely. And the first day, you'd be, you know, like the first day of class, you know, some kid belched and he was like, "Hey, nice manners. What do you say to your mom at the dinner table? Hey, you fucking cunt, pass me the fucking potatoes." And all the kids were like, the air got sucked out of the room. Like, you could say that? Like, it was crazy.
That's awesome.
But, you know, they didn't teach us a literal translation of the Bible. They taught us very figurative.
Jesuits
tried to explain, like, listen, you have to understand politically what was going on at the time when the Bible was written. It was assembled over many, 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 you know, years and decades and centuries. And so, you know, like, these were just tools that they used to try to convey messages.
They started to, like, interpret the Bible, like, that sect of priests? Like, weren't they in charge of education or something?
They were the educators, the Jesuits. Okay. But what I did find out later was that a bunch of priests that I really liked, like, got busted for touching kids, and one of them hung himself, and it was just, like, all this horribleness. But I was not at the epicenter of any...
Well, at least they didn't touch you, I guess. No. That's what you take away from that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fucking... I feel like Catholic school now is just like a rape car wash, where it's just all these priests just hanging their dicks and hands down, and the kids just go through, and they just kind of like... You know, like the buff and wax. And they come out the other side shiny but damaged.
I like how everyone's like freaking out about like the Pope right now, like letting all that stuff go. But people are forgetting that, you know, you say what you will about him, but he was a fucking Nazi. So it's like, you know,
not surprising.
Say what you will. That's not where I thought you were going.
Matt Besser, when he would do the Pope at the when they did that Last Comic Standing parody at UCB, I forget, but his joke was, "I was in the Nazi Youth, but you could not blame the Muppets for the crimes of the Muppet Babies." So funny.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, Matt Walsh, just kind of wrapping up here in a second, but I mean...
We're going to fix my AOL.
We're going to fix your AOL.
I'm really excited about that.
And by fixing your AOL, we're going to jettison your AOL. Yeah.
Well, I just want to access my inbox first, and then I'll do
Did you bring your AOL disc that you got in the mail? That's the only
way to get your 70
with Barnes & Noble.
70 free
right?
hours. Yep, your 70 free hours.
God, what a rip-off.
People still access the internet that way. Yeah. Just
I paid
in case
for AOL
wondering.
For like 8 years.
My parents, I believe,
what
still
a dumbass
do. I still have my AOL account. MattMeyer@AOL.com. Go ahead. I never check it.
Okay.
I need to. You know, I just want to change the color of my Windows 3.1.
What was your first email address?
My first email address was in 1994. Matthew D2.
Matthew D2.
Yeah. And then I dumped it because I was like, when I get older, I might have to use this. So I went with Matt Meyer.
I've had the same one since 96. AOL.
That's fantastic.
That's why I keep it, you know, in case somebody from my past wants to get a hold of me. I'm afraid
they can
lose
find you. No, they can find you on Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now there's
my first email address was Barf the Mog. If you bring it back to your Spaceballs talking about it.
Oh, wow.
Barf the Mog at webtv.com.
WebTV?
WebTV was a little TV.
Oh, we had WebTV. My dad brought it home one day. He was really excited about it. We put it in the kitchen, and I never touched it.
Yeah, it was horrible. But yeah, Barf the Mog at webtv.com.
It was Chris.
Mine was 1994. I had just started working for MTV, and I was at the beach house over the summer, and they had just formed this partnership with AOL. And so we all got free AOL accounts. So my first stupid email was MTV Wic. But you could have five different usernames. So I had Craptastic was my actual one. And that's where you'd go onto message boards, and all you would see would, you know, like RIP Kurt Cobain. Like, that's all message boards were back then. And I didn't understand how the internet worked.
Do you remember the early days? Like, I remember the early days of like having to go and like, I would go to my dad worked at Hewlett Packard, and we would go sometimes on the weekends, and I would sit there and he'd dial up and I would get on there, and it would just be text, and I would just be like sitting there looking through text of the internet.
Oh, that's amazing.
Like, my generation, or Jonah and I, our generation is really the first one that sort of like came in, and then like computers sort of happened when we were able to learn it.
Yeah.
But the kids now that are just born.
Oh, they're just going to be so much smarter than us.
They're fucking iPhones.
Yeah. Think of how fast information can be delivered now. Like, you had to go to the library to look something up.
Well, smarter, but also not smarter in the sense that we've made it very convenient for them. I mean, it's sort of like you get a computer now, and it's like a toaster. You know, we don't know how to build a toaster. Kids don't know how to, like, most kids don't know how to program. They just know everything's handed to them.
I was with my friend the other night, and she's like, hey, we're talking about citizens arrests, and she was like, can you really just citizens arrest somebody? And I was like, I don't know. And
Google
then
it.
We're driving, and she just pulls up the phone, and I was like, you realize that 20 years ago, we'd have to look at a library, and none of us, we'd never know.
Arguments
would
last
bother.
A lot longer. Yeah. It's like, once we find out that thing that we were arguing
there's
about.
There's a bar bet that
you should
overnight.
Never, ever, ever ask anyone a question about anything ever again because of Google.
Yeah.
You're just look it up.
There's a website called Let Me Google That For You, right?
Yeah.
So if someone asks you a question, you go to Let Me Google That For You, you type it in, and it does a Google search and brings up the first thing and then clicks on the first thing for you, the first result, and you can send the link to somebody,
screen cap. You get the
and
movie
it will
capture.
Show you a flash video of someone typing into Google, hitting the enter button, and then going to that first
Which is
site.
Really a lot more effort than just flipping them off and showing them your asshole, which is really what you're doing.
Let me Google that for you.
That is funny. My first exposure to the internet was like in 92 or 3. This guy was playing chess with some guy in Russia, like when a few people had it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if he was a guy in the theater, and he would just play chess. I'm like, how are you doing that? And he'd have to turn the phone, or he'd have to plug it into the phone.
Oh, isn't that almost started that second Cold War?
He wanted to play global thermonuclear war.
I think about Matt Walsh's friend from that had a friend in Russia. I'm pretty sure I remember this exactly how it went down.
But my first gig in New York, we wrote for an internet show that Microsoft was sponsoring, and they were so excited, and they said, anything you want to do. And we would just spend time on the internet like trying to figure it out. Like, Navigator was the browser or
remember
whatever.
Delphi?
Netscape.
And they brought us downstairs to show people the opening credits for the show, and they were so excited about the programmers, like, you got to see this. This is going to be so cool. People are going to come to our show. And literally all it was that film thing. He hit a button, and it just went 10, 9, 8, like that, just like at the beginning of film. And then it scrolled across in like a flashing scroll. It just said Emergency Broadcast Network, and that was it.
Wow.
We all just left that room going, we were so bummed. This is never going to be good. This will never be good. This is like, and that's where, this is 1996 when I got my first email. It was like exactly cutting edge technology. And this is like, there's no reason to go on the internet.
I remember
there's no reason.
I remember seeing video for the first time on a computer and how like pixelated. Like, I remember the Windows 95 disc came with Weezer's Buddy Holly video.
Really?
Oh, wow.
And I would watch that constantly.
And it was
like,
kind of great.
It looks great, but now it's fucking.
You go on WebCrawler to search shit. Does WebCrawler still exist?
Dogpile was what my dad would use.
Oh, really?
Dogpile.com.
Is WebCrawler a browser?
WebCrawler, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a great browser, but it was a browser. I mean, like, it was a browser, and it had a little cartoon spider on it, and, you know, and it.
Sorry.
All right.
Sorry.
What happened?
Afraid of spiders?
I mean, even an internet forum? You're afraid of search engine
cartoon
spiders.
Search engine spiders. It's a very specific fear.
Oh, my God. I didn't think I never thought I would hit that button in you.
Brown button.
Sorry.
Well, you've activated my amygdala, which has big cartoon internet spider painted on it.
But you got to get out of here.
I got to go.
Jones got to go do his taxes.
Got to go do my taxes.
Oh, break a leg.
April 15th. Web crawling up on us.
April 15th?
Jesus.
Yeah.
I got time. I'll cancel it.
Yeah. Hey, the texting. Can you get them to change that?
He's literally getting up.
Goodbye. I'm sorry. It's like I called him back to see if I could push it forward, because I'm a big fan of yours. I really get
thank you. I'm a big
that.
Fan of yours.
Didn't you explain to them the words podcast?
Yeah.
I guess really just one word.
They asked me if I could write it off. I said, I don't think so. No one makes money off of this.
Actually costs Chris quite a bit.
Well, see you later, Jonah. Right,
see you. Bye, Jonah.
There he goes. Well, if I were a better host, I would have timed this so that we wouldn't have had to.
You know.
Oh, the door's locked. There he goes.
This mess makes it real.
There he goes.
Talk about Jonah.
Bye, guys.
Bye, Jonah.
Now he's in.
Jonah's lit.
He's in the out of doors.
Jonah's gone.
My dog Scott is curious as to why he would leave in the middle of the podcast, but dogs don't understand the concept of paying taxes, so you can understand.
That's a total status move, by the way. He doesn't have taxes to do.
No.
He's just like, I'm more important than everybody.
Think about it. It's status for a couple different reasons. Number one, it makes us go, how much money is he making? He's got a tax appointment. Yeah. Number two, he fucking ditches us in the middle of a thing.
I don't have to do any of the breakdown.
That's amazing.
You guys handle it.
He makes a big exit. So
you're just left with two people named Matthew Paul.
Oh my God.
That is weird.
It is, yeah. I saw your Twitter name and I was like, oh fuck, there's another one.
Catholic man group.
Let's hug it out with our penises.
No,
that's how we did it.
Penis car wash.
Yeah, no, I mean,
penis
car
wash.
It's called a penis hug, but we just called it hugs.
Of course.
Right?
If you're in it, if you don't know any better, they're just hugs.
That's what...
There was a priest who took that took the kids at our Catholic school in Chicago, I guess my brother's age, like the seventh graders, and it was like mandatory skinny dipping.
Oh.
Like in a lake.
Wow.
And it was just like, and nobody ever got touched in that moment, but it's still wrong to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's not.
He's like, no, you don't need to bring that.
It's just as easy to say, bring your swimsuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my brother's like, I don't want to go. And my dad's like, no, you don't have to go.
Like, I was a Boy Scout. I was an altar boy, and I never got touched.
Well, you were just dancing all through. I mean,
you went through the fucking gauntlet of pedophilia.
You just strapped on a jacket made out of stakes and walked through Lion Country Safari. And somehow you made it through to the other side. That's not bad.
You weren't curious, about?
But so did I. I mean, like, I guess I did too. I was a Cub Scout, and I was an altar boy. Ugh. And
I picture you being an Eagle Scout. You never had any interest.
No, I didn't know.
I was almost an Eagle Scout. Then they required the physical fitness merit. But
the problem is the Eagle Scout kids were too intense.
Yeah.
For me, it was a different kind of intensity. I was a chess club nerd, D&D. Like, I didn't, you know.
My dad's always, like, regretted me not becoming an Eagle Scout.
Was he an Eagle Scout?
He was one of the Scoutmasters.
Oh.
So it was really, when I left, I got a girlfriend, and then I was like, I'm not going to Boy Scout meetings anymore.
Yeah.
I can see boobs whenever I want.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then I just
Why do I have to tie neckerchiefs?
And my friend John back home one day, my dad was around, and we were there, and he was like, are you really as mad as Matt says about him not becoming an Eagle Scout? And he goes, no. And then about 2 minutes of silence passed, and then he goes, but he was really close.
He can't let it go.
All right, so we're going to get you off AOL. We're going to change your Twitter screen name. We're going to put you in the Eagle Scouts.
Yes. Let's get me 1,000 followers on Twitter.
Could you go back? That's all a right, sitcom. Let's go back to finish your Eagle Scout thing. That'd be a good sitcom.
That would be amazing.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Don't steal this idea.
Yeah, I'm sure no one's going to steal the idea.
Yeah.
But yes, we want to help Matt. Are you Matt Myra or Matthew Myra?
I'm Matt Myra.
Matt Myra.
M-I-R-A.
Okay.
Follow Matt Myra on Twitter so we can get him 1,000 followers
that he
wants for some
reason.
After
I get 1,000 and you see that I have 1,000, don't bother. I don't want it.
Well, that's not, I mean.
Oh, no, fine.
Now you're just shitting on people who want to help you.
You probably have 10,000 at least.
He's got.
Don't tell me you have a million.
Do
you have a million?
1.3 million.
Oh my fucking God!
How many do you have, Matt?
I only have I'm almost at 4,000.
Okay,
And you've made it difficult for people to find you, so that's actually quite a feat.
Let's get Matt Walsh.
Don't
10,000.
Say that, Chris. Nothing. No,
it is.
It's not a million.
It is.
That's ridiculous.
Insane.
Listen, I don't, you know, I'm not trying to win
That's
this dirt pissing
Twitter
contest.
God.
We're all equal here.
Would you be in the top, say, 100 people with that kind of number?
You know, actually, I don't know if I am,
to be honest. Because there are corporations that have, like...
Well, Ashton Kutcher's got, like, 5 million or something crazy like
Lady
that.
Lady Gaga has, like, something like 8 or 12.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. So.
But how many Lady Gagas and Kutchers are out there? That's it.
I think just Lady Gaga and Kutcher.
If she gets married, is he Lord Gaga?
Yes, Lord and Lady Gaga.
I don't know.
Well, Matt Walsh, thank you very much for being on our podcast. People will hopefully find you on your new Twitter username.
Matthew Paul Walsh for now.
For now.
Yes.
By the time this comes out, it might be different
if
we do our jobs properly.
Let's get Matt 5,000 and me 1,000.
Okay.
Come on, Nerdist. You guys can do it.
All right, and I want 10 million.
Let's get Chris 10 million.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Give it time.
The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
Hey, listeners, it's Will Arnett. Our podcast, Smartless, has crossed a milestone that seemed unfathomable when we started nearly 4 years ago, as we've just released our 200th 100th episode. Join us as we welcome that dynamic duo of hilarity, Steve Martin and Martin Short. You've seen them on screen together in The Three Amigos, Father of the Bride 1 and 2, and most recently, and only Murders in the Building. Both are comedic geniuses in their own right, but together they are always electric. And this episode of SmartList is no exception. I don't know if I've laughed more in a single episode than this one. We discuss their career arcs both separately and as a comedy team, how they met, who is more difficult to work with, and what motivates them today. Is Steve a better banjo player than Marty as a singer? Find out on this bicentennial episode of SmartList. Follow SmartList in the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to SmartList ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Plus, you get to hear Sean cry. What a loser!